Hello and welcome back to the latest edition of the Further Review podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skursky, joined by executive sports editor Perrin Keyes. And Perrin, much like Josh Allen with a broken nose, we have battled through. Our issue has been technological, but we have made it. We're here for another day and another episode to discuss the Bills' 30-10 victory over the Jets. And I feel like last week I started with the reaction from my son, so I guess it's appropriate to do that again. And the first thing that he said to me was, "That was kind of boring, Dad." And I said, "Well, they were bad for a long, long time, son, before you remember that. And so let's not ever really complain about 30-3 victories that end up being 30-10 with a garbage time touchdown." But the Bills did make it look pretty easy, and I think the place to start is offensively, and the reason that they did is because James Cook made it look pretty easy. You know, 132 yards on the ground, two touchdowns. He was, you know, one of the talking points this offseason, Perrin, was, you know, what's going to happen with James Cook? Are they going to get a deal done? Should they get a deal done? And through 2 weeks, he's got three rushing touchdowns, and yesterday really, I thought, displayed his value to this team and this offense.
Jay, this is why... this is why you pay a guy like James Cook and try to work to get a deal done. I mean, you mentioned certainly all through this summer, and I think I have to agree with you that you know, you thought that last year during the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs that he was the best player on the field, and I happen to agree with you. He was certainly the best skill player on the field against the Chiefs. You know, they don't make it as far or as close to winning that game without him. And I think, you know, if we want to, you know, let's start with the highlight reel run, the 44-yard run. You saw sort of him at the height of his powers, showing, you know, all the tools in his toolbox, the jump cut, the him showing his skills in terms of, well, let's start with his vision. You have to be able to, you know, all great running backs have vision. You have to have vision to start off with. To be able to see where to dance around and sort of make your way, navigate your way through the wreckage, to cut left and then to break right. You have to be light on your feet. You can do all the foot drills and the tire drills that you want to. It's one thing to do that, but it's another thing to actually be that light on your feet to be able to move around. And then the other thing too, it's one thing to navigate your way through all that wreckage, but it's another thing to be able to stop and start. Like he did. I'm thinking, you know, we talk about the Chiefs. I'm thinking about Jamaal Charles and some of the other guys who were able to really stop and start and get up to, you know, from 0 to 60, so to say, you know, so fast, and then to hit top speed and outrace everybody to the goal line. So, you know, hey, he's not only one of the lead backs, he's not only the Bills' lead back, but he's starting to assert himself as one of the lead backs in the NFL. And so, again, that's why you pay the guy. And, you know, when Josh Allen is not having his greatest day that he's ever had, you know, it's easy to say, well, hey, you know, look, the guy busted up his nose and there's protection issues. He was, I think, when Josh, before he got his bloody nose, Josh Allen, I think it was something like 3 of 10 for 11 yards. I mean, it wasn't just that he, you know, got smashed in the face, which he did. You know, the pass game was inconsistent to begin with. I never really found a rhythm. And by the way, how about that? Isn't it great to not really feel like you're in rhythm offensively and still put 30 points on the board? So, yes, great to have a guy like number four on your team, and great to have him show out if you're the Bills.
Yeah, I think in two of the Bills' last three games now, going back to the AFC Championship game and then this one, James Cook has been their best offensive player, and that includes Josh Allen. And that speaks a lot to his value. And, you know, I had to laugh when you thought about everything that was being said in the offseason in terms of, you know, well, they've got Ray Davis and they've got Ty Johnson. They'll be okay at running back. They don't necessarily need to, you know, pay James Cook. Well, he's shown his value. I mean, you look at the production from Davis and you look at the production from Ty Johnson the first two games on the ground, and it really hasn't been there. I mean, this running game is going through James Cook, and to your point, I mean, I think he's solidifying himself as one of the best running backs in the NFL at this point.
Jay, moving on to the defense now. Joey Bosa, certainly, speaking of players who look like they were worth the money, We're only two games in, but Joey Bosa certainly looks like he's been worth the money. He has been worth the money to this point. Christian Benford certainly looks like he's worth the money that, you know, he got the extension this year, this offseason. Tre'Davious White comes back. And listen, long story short, the Bills desperately needed to put together a much better offense, excuse me, a much better defensive showing coming off of that week one barn burner against the Baltimore Ravens. And certainly it's a little bit easier to do when you don't have to contend with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and they may have to contend with those two guys somewhere later down the line this postseason if they get that far. And this is the New York Jets, and of course we have to keep that in mind. But nonetheless, you had to have a bounce back effort like this, and boy did they, holding the Jets to, I believe, 154 yards from scrimmage, and a lot of those yards came in mop-up time. Just a sterling defensive performance by the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Bosa at the start, so let's start there. You know, forced fumble, a sack, did all of his damage in only 27 defensive snaps, 55% of the total. Bills weren't on the field defensively. I mean, I'm looking at the snap counts here. I think they only had to play 47 defensive snaps. So what a blessing that is, and how fortuitous that is, especially going into a Thursday game. Bosa's been worth the money. That's a great way of putting it. I mean, he is making the impact plays that the Bills were counting on Von Miller to make. I mean, that's the role, right? This sort of assassin that you hire on the defensive line to, you know, be the closer. And, you know, Bosa has done that. And, you know, when you look at the pass rush totals, you know, yeah, it's been a little bit of a quiet start for Greg Rousseau. He had a half sack yesterday. Ed Oliver is out right now, and we'll see how long that continues to be. But yeah, I think Bosa has given the Bills everything that they could have hoped for at this point. You know, talking with Cam Lewis yesterday, who stepped in for Taron Johnson, and we said, what was the defensive focus? Immediately, stop the run. And, you know, the Bills did that well enough early that it made Justin Fields have to throw. And, I mean, what a disaster that was for the Jets. I mean, and we'll talk more about the Jets later in the show and, you know, kind of our state of the AFC East. But this was a game where the Bills identified some weaknesses from Baltimore defensively in terms of run defense, and I thought really shored that up, really improved that. The tackles for loss, I mean, we saw Milano had one for 3 yards, Trey White had one for 5 yards, Benford had one for 10 yards. 10 yards, I mean, that's a huge play. It's not a sack, but it's as good of a sack, you know, maybe even better than a sack. And, you know, the takeaways, they've won the turnover battle now 24 straight games. That's an NFL record. Unbelievable stat. So when when you're able to do that, and Bosa said it after the game, when you're able to get the ball back to Josh Allen, usually good things are going to happen. And, you know, offensively, they score 30. I guarantee Joe Brady and Sean McDermott are sitting around today lamenting the missed opportunities, right? The settling for field goals instead of touchdowns. So there were things that they could clean up offensively, but defensively, they made the necessary improvements that you'd want to see from week one to week two. Let's just take the opponent out of it, right? It's an NFL team. The Jets scored 30-something points in their first game against Pittsburgh. And so this was a much better showing, a much needed showing by this Bills defense.
And just as you said, we'll get to this in a moment, but just as you said, to do so without Ed Oliver, who maybe was the best, speaking of the best player on the field, certainly the best defensive player on the field for the Bills in week one, to do so without Taron Johnson's dealing with a quadriceps injury, and not knowing whether you're going to get those guys back for a tight turnaround on Thursday, to do all that to Tre'Davious White again, he's back on the field, to do all that with some of your key guys missing, you know, you couldn't ask for much more. Interesting. Also, Jay, I thought it was interesting. You noted that they came out in a 4-3 base defense to start the game. They toyed with that a little bit throughout the game. Just sort of your thoughts on that. And also some of the guys who stepped up sort of in the absence of some of the other players as well.
Well, I think when you hear Cam Lewis talk about wanting to stop the run, how that was the number one priority going into this game, it makes a little bit more sense. Also makes sense. Taron Johnson isn't in the lineup. You know, he's the guy that it's really difficult to take off the field when you go to a 4-3. But you're able to put Dorian Williams out there next to Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard at linebacker. That certainly makes you a little tougher to run against. I didn't look at Williams' snap counts yet this morning to see just how much they were in 4-3. But It's something that we're seeing a little bit more of. I mean, you look around the league and, whoever watched that Sunday night game, Atlanta and Minnesota, I mean, running attacks right now are really powering offenses. And Bijan Robinson, the game he had, the game that James Cook had yesterday, it's, I don't know, it's probably a little too soon to say, it's a trend in week two, but, rushing attacks certainly seem to be, you think of the success that the Eagles have had with Saquon Barkley. There really seems to be a focus right now, and that's tough for teams to defend when they want, even at linebacker, they're smaller, they're undersized guys. Terrell Bernard is the size of a safety, not so long ago in the NFL. And so I can understand the Bills' want and desire to get a little bit bigger on the defensive side of the ball, especially when you're going up against a team like the Jets. Breece Hall's given them trouble in the past, and we know that Justin Fields can do some damage with his legs. Even we saw glimpses of that yesterday where they were able to get outside. The problem for New York was they would, they'd run off a couple of 8 or 10 yard runs, and then they'd have a big negative play and be behind the sticks.
Breece Hall, 29 yards rushing. Justin Fields was actually the leading ball carrier for the Jets with 49 yards rushing. Justin Fields, 27 yards passing for the day. Jay, let's talk injuries. We mentioned it in the last segment. Ed Oliver, of course, missing in this game. He, as we mentioned before, he was probably the best player. Well, he was the best player on defense for the Bills in week one. Taron Johnson, their exceptional nickel cornerback, out in this game with the quadriceps injury that he couldn't come back from. Again, it's a tight turnaround playing Miami on Thursday. We just talk about the turnaround schedule or the tight schedule on it for a Thursday night game. You think about the NFL schedule for players. Monday you have a sort of a light practice. Tuesday is typically your day off. And then Wednesday, you're preparing for, if it's a, you're talking about a Thursday game, you're preparing for the game. That's the day before the game. It's really, if you think about it from a player's standpoint, it's virtually no time to turn around for this game. So let's just talk about injuries and sort of the turnaround, the tight turnaround for some of these guys who are trying to come back. And then also, if we could, let's touch on Matt Milano. It looked like he was dealing, he sort of fell awkwardly trying to chase down a ball carrier, Justin Fields, on that scramble. May or may not have been a hamstring issue. Certainly looked like it. Also, I had a shoulder brace there in the second half that he was wearing that he didn't have in the first half. Anything we can sort of ascertain or discuss from all three of those players and some of the other Bills who may or may not be able to come back for this tight turnaround on Thursday against the Dolphins?
Yeah, so I mean, let's start with Milano. He played 49% of the defensive snaps, but to your point, when the second half started, he is not out there with the remainder of the defensive starters. Certainly, that would indicate in my mind that it was precautionary at best in nature by the Bills, or potentially that he was unable to come back. The odd thing was that there was no official injury report provided by the game or by the team during the game, which is required if a player is hurt. So, we'll ask Sean McDermott about that today in his post-game press conference or post-day following the game press conference. That's usually in the 4 o'clock hour. Milano's a player that's dealt with hamstring injuries before. If that is indeed what it is, and again, it's premature, that's not us reporting that. That maybe is speculative in nature at this point. But if it is the case, you'd have to think he's out Thursday. I mean, there's almost no chance that he'd be ready to go on such a quick turnaround. And then you're looking at 10 days off after this game. So for anybody that's dealing with, an injury, I think, this is the one where this is a game where you say we got to be cautious with this. So in my mind, that makes you wonder, does Taron Johnson get back? I doubt Ed Oliver has a chance to get back. The good news, if you're a Bills fan, is that the players who stepped into the lineup for them, I thought, played pretty well. I thought, Cam Lewis is a trusted veteran. I mean, this guy's got a ton of experience in this defensive system. He's a player that's growing in confidence too. We spoke with him afterward, and what stuck out to me was him saying, I believe I could start for many teams in this league. And so, that's a player that's got confidence in his ability, and certainly the coaching staff in turn has confidence in him if he has to step in for Taron Johnson. I thought he did a nice job in the game. And then Zion Loke, a guy that, probably players don't know a heck of a lot about, gets called up from the practice squad on Saturday with Oliver being out. Pretty cool moment for him. He gets to share in his first NFL sack with Greg Rousseau. He's a big dude, and the Bills claimed him off of waivers last year from Atlanta. He spent, I think, two games on the active roster. Wasn't much of a look. Then was on the practice squad for the rest of the year. But clearly, they see something in him to keep him around, and for him to get the opportunity to step in, knowing he was going to get snaps with Oliver out of the lineup. I thought he equated himself pretty well, and so for all those reasons, I think you got to be cautious with these guys. There's no sense in hurrying them back on a Thursday game, particularly when you have 10 days off to prepare for Week 4 after this game. And Perrin, as we kicked around ideas for the show late last night, I texted you the fourth segment was going to be the autopsy of the Miami Dolphins. Perhaps that is a bit premature, right, at only 0-2 through the season, but I think it does speak to where the Dolphins are right now. I think they are, if they're not dead, they might be on life support. And, you know, with a week, with a short week and a long trip up to Buffalo to prepare for a game against the Bills, I think it's got to be panic time down in Miami. What did you make of the Dolphins dropping to 0-2 yesterday with a loss to the Patriots?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we all saw them in week one, and they just absolutely got steamrolled by Indianapolis. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. Certainly, not, you know, Daniel Jones is having quite a first 2 weeks to the season here, but I don't think we saw any of us saw that coming in week one. The Colts just absolutely blowing away the Dolphins to start out. Then they fall behind against the Patriots Sunday afternoon, and you say, boy, here we go again. Now, to have them lose the game the way they, you know, a tight game, the way they lost at New England with 10 points in the fourth quarter to be able to pull out the victory, I don't know. I'd be lying if I said I knew what kind of mindset they're in. They know they're 0-2. We've all seen the long-term statistics about 0-2 teams in the NFL and their percentage, their odds to make the playoffs. It's pretty grim. We all probably feel like Mike McDaniel is running pretty close to being, you know, to having his hot seat burst into flames, for lack of a better way to put it. Tyreek Hill is seemingly perpetually, although he had a great game, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday. He did go over the 100-yard mark for the first time in a long time, Tyreek Hill. But it doesn't seem as though he and Tua are on the same page. Tua's wild with his throws still. And so I'd be lying if I said I knew what their psyche is like. I can't imagine that it's good. I can't possibly begin to speculate on what type of, you know, are they going to come in here and lay an egg in Orchard Park on Thursday night? Or is this going to be one, you know, a team that plays desperate and inspired, knowing that if they fall to 0-3, that it's pretty much game, set, match for the, you know, and now you're playing, what, 14, 15 more games. You know, basically you're playing out the string and you haven't made it out of September yet. So that's tough. That's tough. I would venture to say that you're going to probably get your best, most inspired effort out of these guys for at least the first quarter. but that then begs the question, you know, if the Bills get up 10-0, what's going to happen then? Yeah, you know, because then it's that, then you're looking at you're staring down the barrel of a long night and perhaps the dying flickering flames of a long season there for the Dolphins. So yeah, it's getting close to closing time for the Dolphins, and as I said, you haven't even closed out the month of September yet.
Yeah, I mean, a desperate team is a scary team. I'll say that, right? And so I'm sure that that's the message for Sean McDermott on a short week, is that we're not taking them lightly. They know they need a win. Mike McDaniel might need a win, quite frankly, to save his job, right? With a long break after week three, if the Dolphins decide, hey, we're going to make a change, maybe you do it now in hopes of, it would be unusual, certainly, but maybe they say, hey, there's enough time to to salvage this season. We're going to make this change now after a Thursday game and give the new guy some runway to get ready for week four and beyond. You know, you look at the Patriots, right? And they get a much needed win. They've got Pittsburgh next at home and then Carolina. And then it's Buffalo on Sunday night. And so, you know, the potential, I think, is there for New England to come into this game 3-1. And, you know, I wasn't as high on New England as some people going into the season, but I got to admit, Drake May made some big time throws yesterday. And, you know, the Jets, I'm just going to give you a quick thought on them. I thought Aaron Glenn did a horrible job yesterday. I mean, kicking a field goal down 20 to nothing is, it's just a baffling decision against the Bills. I mean, you've got a 4th-and-3 and you're going against Josh Allen. Like, what in the world are you doing? There was another situation later in the game where he punted on 4th-and-1. I just, it's just an epidemic among these coaches to just coach so scared. And there is just so much information out there to say this is fundamentally the wrong decision. I would be, you know, there's a lot of concern for Jets fans coming out of that game. They had a lot of injuries defensively. Justin Fields is, you know, in concussion protocol now and didn't look very good before he went out of the game. But boy, for a lot of what I liked, you know, what I was hearing from Aaron Glenn, before the season in New York, boy, those decisions were just, I just can't reiterate enough how bad of a decision it is to kick a field goal to stay down 3 possessions when you're playing against Josh Allen.
It surprised me, and it surprised me given just what you and I discussed last week about what we liked about Aaron Glenn. You know, this is a guy who, you know, he's been schooled by some of the most intense, aggressive, in your face, I'm going to tell you like it is, I'm going to take it to you. Bill Parcells, Sean Payton, Dan Campbell, these are the guys who Aaron Glenn learned under and played under. You know, I'm going to take the fight to you. And this is mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm here. I'm going to, you know, I'm here to play, and I'm here to punch you in the teeth and go down swinging kind of thing. Yes, it did surprise me. And it felt like he, it didn't feel like they had a lot of fight, I guess would be the best way to put it. And that was really surprising, especially when I'm still high on Aaron Glenn. And to me, they just don't have the guys. And then the Patriots, as you discussed, I wasn't as high on them going into the season as a lot of people, just like yourself. But yeah, Drake May, I don't know that he's ever going to be a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, but he looks like somebody who you can win with if you've got enough pieces. And I do think that Mike Vrabel has got a lot going for him. I think he's a good coach. And they've got a lot of, you know, we knew they had a lot of cap space going into it. Looks like Ramondre Stevenson's still going to be their lead back. And they've got some fight to him. They gave Las Vegas a fight in that first game. And just as you said, the schedule sets up well for them. So certainly New England looks like they've got everything to have them be the most likely contender with Buffalo for the race for the AFC East as we go down the road.
Yep, and as we've mentioned several times, quick turnaround for the Bills. Thursday night against Miami at home at Highmark Stadium also means a quick turnaround for us. We will be back on Friday with another edition of the Further Review podcast. Lucky everyone out there, 2 in a week, right? From the Buffalo News and Perrin, the executive sports editor, Perrin Keyes, thank you so much, as always, for joining me, Jay Skursky, with the Buffalo News. Again, we'll be back on Friday following the Bills Week 3 game at home against Miami. Thanks so much for watching and listening to Further Review.